Wait a minute, this sounds like rock and or roll.
Hello, welcome to Rock and or Roll. I'm your reluctant host, BJ. On today's episode, you're going to get to hear a conversation I had with Michael Butler, host of the Rock and Roll Geek Show, one of the longest-running podcasts, one of the very first podcasts, one of the longest-running continual podcasts, definitely the longest-running podcast about rock and roll out there, and the first podcast I ever listened to. I started listening to the Rock and Roll Geek Show back in probably 2005, not very long after Michael Butler started doing the show. And the reason I found the Rock and Roll Geek Show was because I was a big fan of a band called American Heartbreak. And I went to the American Heartbreak website, and Michael Butler was the bass player in American Heartbreak, so the Rock and Roll Geek Show was listed on the American Heartbreak website, and that's why I started listening to the show. And then later I discovered that Michael was also in a band called the Flexipleasers that I was also a fan of. So my idea for today's episode was to talk to Michael about his music, about his bands, specifically the Flexipleasers and American Heartbreak. Now, since I was a fan of Michael's bands and a longtime listener to his podcast, I suppose I was overconfident and didn't think I needed to prepare much for the interview, and I didn't have a lot of questions prepared. I didn't have any sort of an outline or anything, and that was a mistake because there were a lot of things that I wish I would have asked him about that I didn't, and the conversation went off on tangents. But we do start out talking about the Flexipleasers and American Heartbreak, and you'll get to hear a lot of great music by those bands. And then we end up talking about some of Michael's favorite interviews he did on the Rock and Roll Geek Show, and I play some clips from some of those interviews. We talk about when he got kicked out of his band on his podcast. I play a clip of that. We talk about his podcast, War, with the Classic Metal Show, and I play a clip from that. So I think it'll be a really entertaining episode. But since there were those questions that I wish I would have asked that I didn't, I asked Michael some of them on Facebook. For example, I asked him where the Flexipleasers got their name, and he said one of the band members worked at a pornography store, and that was an item that they sold, a Flexipleaser. And I asked him how he met Billy Rowe. Now, Billy Rowe was the guitar player in 80s Sunset Strip glam metal band Jet Boy. And Michael said he met Billy at a Screaming Jets show. Now, if you listened to part three of my Australian rock trilogy, you heard a great song by the Screaming Jets called Blue Sashes. That's how Michael and Billy met. Eventually, they were in a band together called Mind Zone, which was a post-Jet Boy band. Michael Butler grew up in Florida, and he was in a punk band called Stevie Stiletto, and at some point he moved to San Francisco. He auditioned for Exodus and got the gig as the bass player in Exodus. He was on their Force of Habit record, and he toured with the band when they opened for Black Sabbath when they reunited with Ronnie James Dio on the Dehumanizer tour. And then he was in Mind Zone, I guess, with Billy Rowe and I think some of the other guys from Jet Boy. And then in the late 90s, I guess, Michael and Billy formed a band called American Heartbreak. Really great rock and roll band. Michael said, Billy Rowe and I discovered the Wild Hearts and American Heartbreak was born. In between, Michael had a band called the Flexipleasers, which were kind of a pop-punk rock and roll band. And the Flexipleasers had an album called Beautiful Music for Beautiful People. Really good stuff. But then after American Heartbreak broke up, Jet Boy reunited, and Michael Butler ended up being the bass player in Jet Boy for a time. So enjoy my interview with Michael Butler.
I'm super great. Couldn't be better. Thanks for asking. I hope I don't ruin your podcast. I'm warning you in advance.
No.
Not that great. I'm not that great on people's podcasts.
Yeah, well, have you ever done one where you talked about your own music and your own songs? Like, I mean, that's kind of like what I was thinking of doing, but...
All right, whatever you want to do, I don't care.
I was trying to figure out when I started listening, and it was probably... When did you start doing it? The Rock and Roll Geek Show.
August of 2004. I am probably the longest continually running podcast because Adam Curry stopped doing.
Right.
And Don and Drew started after me. Rick, the only person that's still doing a podcast that started before me by about a week is Dave Slusher, but he's very hidden. He will get back into doing it after a long hiatus.
Right.
So the longest continually running, the guy who does a show just about every week is me. But I'm definitely the very first music podcast. Nothing to brag about. I mean, I should be a lot bigger than I am if I'm bragging about it. But
well, it's definitely the first podcast I ever listened to. And, you know, now I subscribe to I don't know how many. But, I mean, I couldn't have started listening that much longer after you started doing it. I know when I started listening, you were still painting houses.
Yeah,
so that was pretty,
you know, going back to it.
yeah. It comes full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I have my own video network, but I think corporate life is not up my alley anymore.
It
was very demoralizing working at MeVio.
Yeah.
It was fun until I got promoted. Then it was fucking just ball busting. Daily.
Then were you like a boss?
Yeah.
I don't think I would really.
It wasn't me busting the balls. It was my balls being busted by other bosses.
Right.
Other departments.
Yeah.
I had a good time. I liked filming the shows and stuff like that. But
yeah. The reason I found the Rock and Roll Geek Show in the first place was just because I went to the American Heartbreak website, trying to find out when you guys were going to have a new album. And I just saw it there, and that's why I started. Oh, okay. I mean, I actually had...
Well, did we have a new album, or was it the last album? You were looking for something new after that last album.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been... I mean, it was before the self-titled album, so...
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, because it took a while. After Postcards from Hell, you had You Will Not Be Getting Paid, right, which was...
Well, we also did that split seven. We did a split with some other band called Libertines.
Right. And, they were like, Rotten Apples was on the split? Or
Apples on the split. There was a song called Genius of Crack. I think was Angeline on Postcards? I think it was on Postcards from Hell. That stuff that's on that split is, I think, that's my favorite.
The song called Postcards from Hell was on there, I think.
Yes.
On the split. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Those are my favorite songs that we ever did. I am not a big fan of the that's the one that was a self-titled. I fought with the band, as a matter of fact, recording that. We almost broke up, and I almost quit several times. I fought really hard with those guys. And all the songs on that album ended up being about, was like our, I guess we call it like our rumors, because all those songs were about each of the guys.
Yeah,
other,
I know.
All like, fighting songs.
Yeah, like Somebody. I remember the story behind Somebody. About the drummer or something? Or I don't
remember. It's probably about Lance, the singer.
I remember you telling this story maybe on the podcast at some point about what Somebody was about, but I remember that.
And there was a song called Bitch that Casey wrote about me.
Right. Yeah.
And just about all the songs were about each other. And recording that album was really hard. Lance and Billy wanted to be like Bon Jovi, a cross between Bon Jovi and the Goo Goo Dolls, which I was a fan of early Goo Goo Dolls, but they wanted to be like the Slide version of the Goo Goo Dolls.
Right. Yeah, I love the early Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, you know, the production on that self-titled record is, I guess, too wimpy. It just doesn't have the same
edge or whatever. Billy and Lance thought Postcards from Hell sucked, and they thought it was a bad pop-punk record, and I fought to have any kind of integrity, because I liked Postcards from Hell. That was my fun period, because, you know, we were more hard-edged, and we were a lot more popular, too. Then we did a European tour before that album even came out, before that self-titled thing came out, and Billy and Lance refused. I don't know what I'm talking about. Bad about my friends, but I'm not actually. I'm just being honest.
And I can edit out anything you want.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
So Billy and Lance said, we're not going to play anything off Postcards in this European tour because we're a different. That's not us. We're a different band now. So we went on. We toured Europe. I think we toured like six times. But the last European tour, we played maybe one song off Postcards from Hell. The crowds were fucking practically throwing stuff at us.
Yeah.
It was so embarrassing, and those guys held their guns. It's, I don't care. The audience is wrong. We're better now. We're a different band. So we played that. We just trudged through that European tour, and every day I'm saying, man, we got to play old songs. We got to play old songs. And
the sheets turn red wrapped around my face. Hide my broken dreams. Well, I can't stand anyone. My fuck life is so much fun. While your latchkey lover's in the room, she waits for her love to show. You're my best friend anywhere. I could tell you anything. Well, there's no time for the lonely when they call your name. There's no time for a friend, but thinking about you, you're thinking it too. Wherever you'll be, forget about me. Taking your fill, they're bringing you all. Thinking about calling a friend, but that's gonna have to wait. That's what you are. You're a superstar.
you know, I love What You Deserve. I think the songs on that are so great. So
demos that we just were made, and then this label Paris Records wanted to put it out.
Yeah. So. And did you write those songs?
I wrote a lot of the choruses. Billy wrote some of the music, and Lance wrote a lot of the lyrics. I don't remember what songs were on What You Deserve. So,
well, you know, Wishing Well, A Methadone Baby, Richie James, they're all great. I love it. And then then when you put out, what was it, You Will Not Be Getting Paid, you also put the What You Deserve songs on there. And I remember you said it was demos, because What You Deserve, there's a problem with the production, because the music is too quiet, or the guitars are way too low in the mix and stuff. But
it was recorded in this guy's bedroom. He was just getting into recording, and he asked if we wanted to record there, so we did. And then that label Paris Records heard it, and they wanted to put it out anyway, so I think we just did, because it was something to do. But the artwork on that record was really great.
Yeah,
it was like a rocket, like a Road to Ruin, you know, Ramones. Was Billy's girlfriend, Annie Owens, who is a fantastic artist. The stuff she does now, it blows that away. She's really, really talented.
Yeah, I have the CD right here, which I had to get on eBay at some point.
Would you get it for 50 cents?
No, I don't remember. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. But, it was hard. You couldn't find it anywhere, you know?
Yeah. I was in this band, Stevie Stiletto, and the stuff we have that's on eBay, there's some stuff that goes for like over $100.
Right, yeah. the production on What You Deserve doesn't really bother me, because the songs are awesome. But I remember when it sounded like you were trying to remix it or something for that You Will Not Be Getting Paid. But then when it came out, it seemed like all that really happened was you double-tracked the vocals
something. Oh, that's right. I think I went in there and put some backgrounds on it, fixed the background vocals a little bit. Because we didn't have the masters of the separate tracks, so I just like put it on and just went and double-tracked it in my house.
It was funny because... To me, the one thing that didn't need to be touched on that was the vocals, because they're awesome.
Probably, yeah.
I love Lance's voice.
I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, man.
Well, which song is it? Is it Methadone Baby, where you say, like, you fall back down? You know that part?
I don't remember. I don't know. How's Methadone Baby go?
Oh, jeez.
I can't remember. Shit, I don't even remember how Methadone Baby goes.
There's an awesome part, and I was wondering if it was you.
It probably is. If it's a gritty vocal,
yeah.
It's me.
Yeah,
that's me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love those songs. And then, Postcards from Hell. I still remember when my friend Dan got that, because he must have got it right when it came out. It came out in 2000.
And we thought we were hot shit back then. So we were fearless, and we didn't care. So we thought we were the coolest thing, so we just, like, went for it. And that's why I liked it. That's what I liked about the band back then, because we were like, this was the time when Degeneration was starting to get, and there was a band called Three Colors Red and the Wild Hearts.
Danny's brother.
Yeah. And we were trying to follow that thing, and Baby Chaos. And so we were like the only people around. We thought we were the only people around here doing it, but there were other people doing it too, but, you know, Black Halos and those kind of bands. But so we were fearless, and we just went for it, and it was a lot. We had a lot of attitude. We were, you know, we thought we were the king shit, so it was fun.
That was right when me and my friend Dan had become just obsessed with the Wild Hearts, but that was the time where...
Yeah, I didn't know you were a Wild Hearts fan.
Oh, huge, yeah. I went to New York. I just went to New York to see them in June when they did they did Earth Versus. They did two nights in a row.
Yeah, and somebody offered me a ticket, but I couldn't afford a plane ticket to go out there.
Yeah, I got to see them at South by Southwest back when, you know, Wild Hearts Must Be Destroyed came out. I got to see them do an in-store at Tower Records. It was just about the coolest... live music
acoustic?
Experience. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I got to play with Ginger.
Yeah, I know.
Solo show. That was a dream come true.
But, you know, my friend Dan at the time, he was just trying to find anything else that sounded like the Wild Hearts, and that's why
Same with us. Same with us.
That's why he found American Heartbreak, because he would go online and chat with people and stuff, and somebody must have told him you should check out this band, American Heartbreak. And it was just trying to find more stuff like the Wild Hearts. That's why... You know, that's why we even got into it, you know?
Yeah, and there was this magazine called Hit List, and we got on the cover of that because the guy who put out Postcards had that magazine, so he put us on the cover, and that did a lot for the band. That got us known in Europe.
Right. Oh, yeah, so, I wanted to talk about the Flexipleasers, too.
Uh-huh. That was my band.
Yeah.
That was me singing. I sang half those songs. I sang lead on half those songs and wrote... probably a little more than half of the songs. And Mike Voss was the other singer, and he wrote the other half of the songs. He was in this band called Drunk Engines and Los Avedados, which were basically the same band. They were like a big San Jose band, punk rock, in the punk rock days, like the 80s punk rock days. I'm still friends with all those guys.
Yeah.
That was a fun band because we were all really good friends, and we were just making music because we were friends.
I love that song, Just Might Be. That's my favorite song in there.
That's a Mike Voss song. He wrote that one. That's a good one. But I sang the background. He sang Just Might Be, and then I did some kind of answer back thing.
Right. Yeah, I can still remember. I used to trade, back before the internet, before I was on the internet, at least like late 90s or something. I used to trade with this one guy. Oh no, this was right when I got on the internet. There's this guy who I think he's at MIT. I don't know if he's a professor or what, but he used to send me all kinds of stuff, and I'd send him stuff. And I remember he sent me the Flexipleasers on a cassette, and then I found the CD at a used CD store in Austin at some point. And
there were two different covers. Which one was it?
Yeah, it's the one with like the distorted faces.
Yeah, that was a different. That was the second.
Okay.
Pressing thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had before I found out about Rock and Roll Geek Show, I had the Flexapleasers and I had American Heartbreak, but I didn't. I don't think I knew there was a connection between the two until I started listening to.
Yeah, the production's really bad on the Flexapleasers, really bad. And we went in, actually in a proper studio and recorded that, and the production's not good at all. I wish we could have re-recorded that.
Well, you know, if the songs are good enough, then the production doesn't, I mean, you know, production can make something better or worse, but if the songs are good enough, it doesn't stand in my way of listening to it at all, really.
Our second record was going to be a lot better, too.
Yeah.
We had songs. We had the whole second record written. We went in to record it. And the first thing we recorded was we were going to do, like, you know, this was back when they had a bonus, you know, a CD would have, like, an unlisted bonus track.
Yeah.
We recorded at, like, 10 cover songs. So we were going to have a bonus unlisted bonus that was going to be all covers. So we recorded all the covers. And then we broke up before we recorded the originals.
So you've played some of those covers on the show over the years, haven't you?
Yeah. The quality of those was not that great either.
And you did the Christmas song originally with the Flexapleasers, right?
That's right. That was originally a Flexapleasers too. But I was playing in American Heartbreak and the Flexapleasers kind of overlapped.
Right.
But we both practiced in the same room. So we recorded in both bands, yeah.
So that's weird. So you don't really like the self-titled album? Is it mainly because of the production, or
the songs are decent enough. I think some of the it's not even the production. It's just the songs are a little bit light.
Yeah, I remember when you were playing the songs on the show, like as you were recording the album, you would play the new songs on the show.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, okay. You played somebody, I'm sure, and Raise Up Your Hands. I think at least. Train of thought. Yeah. Sorry.
Isn't that fun when you lose your train of thought? That's happened to me so many times, man. happened to me with Kim Fowley. I had Kim Fowley on my show, and I lost my train of thought. And he goes, come on, man, this is not rock and roll. Ask me something good. And I'm like, frazzled.
Yeah, it must be pretty intimidating to try to interview that guy, you know.
Yeah, Kim Fowley was the craziest.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but, like, you've had, you know, Richie Rano on and the guys from Nazareth and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah,
too,
my
so.
Heroes.
You've probably tried pretty hard to get anyone from Cheap Trick on the show, huh?
Actually, I went to the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. I managed to get press to the Rock. This was back in, like, 2005. My friend got me into the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp as press, so I had full access to the whole thing, and Cheap Trick was there. They did an acoustic set, and then they had clinics. They had a vocal clinic, a guitar clinic, a bass clinic, a drum clinic with all the guys from Cheap Trick. They were all at the same time. So while Rick Nielsen was doing the guitar clinic, blah, 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 I went to the Rick Nielsen one, and I was talking to Rick Nielsen, and we were talking about my show because I got an ID from him at Macworld. I ran into him at Macworld and said, oh, Rick Nielsen's there. Oh, my God, I got to fucking get an ID from Rick Nielsen. So I bombarded him.
Yeah.
You know, oh, Special One, great album. I love Special One. He's like, you hear that? He likes Special One. He was his manager. So anyway, he recognized me, and I told him, you know, I was with one of the guys with Jet Boy because Jet Boy toured with Cheap Trick. And he goes, oh, I'll give you an interview. No problem. You just call my management. So I said it on my show. Next thing, there's this guy who was another podcaster who was on Pod Show, Pod Show Ray or something, contacted Cheap Trick. Rick Nielsen thought he was me.
Oh, no.
This guy went along with it, letting him think that, and he got the motherfucking interview, man. And I was, I was so
say whatever you want.
off, man.
Yeah.
I was so pissed. You can't get it. You know, it costs $5,000 to interview them now. If you try to interview, well, maybe not now that they don't have that David guy as their manager.
Yeah.
But I know, like, a year ago, if you tried to interview them, they would say it would cost $5,000 to interview them if you're like a podcast or something like that.
Wow.
I'm not paying $5,000 to interview anybody in Cheap Trick. I'm sorry. I mean, they're my favorite band of all time, but. You know,
they're your very favorite of any.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yes,
yeah, mine too.
They're the best band in the world.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of reasons.
I can give you at least five reasons right now. Well, it would have been they still have all original members, but they don't now. But
right,
still going, never stopped playing. I mean, never even went on hiatus. They've been playing since day one. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Continues to put out quality music. Each album is as good or better than the last one. I mean, Rockford, latest is not as good as Rockford, but still a fucking quality record. And they're writing a new record now. They just continue to make good music, and they're great players. They have the greatest singer in the world. They have used to be one of the greatest songwriters in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to assume he can get it back. Maybe he needs to start drinking again. I don't know. You know that Red Ant record was at the height of Rick Nielsen's drinking days.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite record of theirs, too. So maybe he needs to start drinking. I don't know.
Yeah, they've been recycling a lot of material, but...
Julian Raymond, because Billy, the guitar player in the Butlers and Jet Boy, is really good friends with Julian Raymond. And they did a Christmas version. I don't know if it ever came out. They did a Christmas version of I Want You to Want Me.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
Has it been released?
I don't know if it's been released. It's on YouTube or something.
Oh,
It's not very good. I mean...
Really?
Well, it's just, he just says, I want you for Christmas instead of I want you to want me. Something like
that. Well, Julian Raymond has been trying to get them to start making another album, but I think Rick Springfield, or Rick... Why do I fucking say I get this? Rick Nielsen... has writer's block and is afraid to start writing again.
Yeah. Yeah, Bunny said recently that he hasn't heard a new song in 10 years.
Yeah.
But a lot of the songs from Special One and Rockford and the Latest were, like, I already had on bootlegs and stuff.
I heard that.
Maybe
heard
like that. 10 total songs from the three, but, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Rockford is probably one of my in my top five Cheap Trick records. It's just
there's great songs.
It's fucking
in that
great.
Record.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I don't know if Bunny it causes them to write better songs, But I know that their live set sucks with, doesn't suck, but it's not as good with Bunny, because Bunny and Rob and Xander can't stand each other. You know that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, supposedly the reason Bunny's out of the band is because Robin said it's him or me.
Actually, I thought it was Bunny said it was him or me, but I could be wrong. One or the other. And yeah, so Bunny had a bad back and couldn't play a lot of the songs. So on one hand, I like seeing Dax in the band because they play more, you know, more deep cuts, if you use that word. But they're not writing anything now without Bunny in the band.
Did you see there were a couple of articles that Classic Rock posted online over the last couple of years with Bunny where basically, you know, there was the whole BS about how he was still in the band, but he just wasn't touring. Yeah. And
You know that they had to pay him 1/4 of gig money, even when they were doing gigs?
Yeah, well, I mean,
They stopped paying him. That's why he sued him.
Yeah. Well, and they legally could not record or release anything as Cheap Trick without him. And then when he heard they were doing that Christmas song, he freaked out. He went to Classic Rock Magazine. He was all pissed off. And so I think, I mean, my theory is that they didn't pay him on purpose. They wanted to force it into the courts because that's the only way they're ever going to be able to make another album. You know,
you might be right, but from what I heard, Julian Raymond had to really, really push Rick Nielsen to start writing tunes again. Yeah. When I saw them when I went to the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, the acoustic thing they did, I was almost crying when I saw them. And the guy who was hosting like the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp was the guy from Night Ranger, Jack Blades.
Yeah.
And he acted like he was like all down with them and real good friends with them. And Rick Nielsen was busting his balls the entire time. It was so funny.
Yeah. 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 What was I going to say? You know, Cheap Trick were like almost like a corporation. Whatever contracts they had, they couldn't just kick Bunny out if he didn't want to go, you know? Whatever, you know, they had contracts. They were a business, and he was a quarter owner. And so they couldn't just say, you're out of the band, because he still owns a quarter of the business. So if Bunny would have left willingly, but since he didn't want to go, they couldn't just force him out. And so, yeah, it's just been a complete fucking mess. And now I haven't heard anything about the lawsuit ever since it was first filed. So I don't know.
Well, you know that they countersued Bunny, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the judge said, I'm going to throw this out until the first lawsuit gets, you know that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know as much as I know. When was the first time you ever saw Cheap Trick?
Yeah, the first time I ever saw them was Woke Up With a Monster.
I saw them, I believe the concert was in Jacksonville Coliseum. I think the lineup was Heart, Foreigner, and Cheap Trick. I know Foreigner and Cheap Trick were on the same bill, and I think Heart might have been on the bill, too. It was In Color Tour. No one had ever heard of Cheap Trick in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah.
And they were so... And next morning, I went and bought In Color. So that's my favorite Cheap Trick album, just because for that reason.
Yeah, well, you know, my two favorites are the first two. I mean, those are the best. But then... But
my favorites are In Color and the 1997.
Sometimes I say One on One is my favorite. I love One on One. It's one of my favorites to listen to.
Yeah, that's the first album with that other bass player, right?
Yeah, with John Brandt. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I like that album too.
Oh, I love it. But yeah, the 1997 album.
I love Special One, man.
Yeah, see, I don't really like Special One. That's
listen to Hummer. How could you not smile listening to the Hummer?
Yeah, Special One is one of my least favorites, probably.
You should go back and listen to it again. Yeah. Sin of a Woman?
Sin of a Woman is good. You know, Too Much is good. Words is good, but it's not even close to as good as Rockford. I love Rockford.
I love Rockford, too. But 1997 is better than all those.
Yeah.
I had a debate. Well, you disagree?
Yeah, I like the 97 album, but it's not one of my favorites.
I had a discussion I do another show, Good Clean Fun, with Jasper, friend Jasper. Yeah. And he had a discussion. He was talking about the 1997 record, and I said, oh, Rockford is better than that one, so much better. And we had a discussion, you know, we had a dueling records, you know. He played the first song of that, and I played a bit of the first song of Rockford. Both records were great. But then I just came back and listened to the 1997 last week, and I just, wow, every song on this record is great, man. There's something, there's a kind of sadness about that record that I really like.
Yeah, there's a darkness. Well, and you know, at the time that record came out was when the whole alternative rock thing was the big thing. And I don't think they were trying to fit in with that, but I do think it influenced it somewhat.
I know the guy who signed them to that record, to that label, Red Ant.
Yeah, that was an old like punk label, wasn't it?
I don't know anything about the label, but I know the guy who was a friend. I was in this band with Billy, pre-Jet Boy, called Mind Zone, and he used to come to all of our shows and go, "Man, I just signed Cheap Trick, man. I just signed Cheap Trick. I can't believe it. I just signed Cheap Trick." And it's a bummer. As soon as he signed him, the record label folded and he lost his job.
Yeah, right.
It's a bummer. But, man, that album is really good. Go back and listen to it again.
Oh, I mean, I've listened to it plenty. Yeah, I remember when it first came out, right after it came out, me and my friend went on a road trip going to record stores, and we just played that record over and over in the car. I saw them before it came out, where they did like probably five of the songs.
Oh yeah,
so
I didn't see it. Well, that was around the time of the three consecutive shows.
Yeah,
you know, the first, second.
That was in like 98.
Did you see any of those shows?
Yeah, I went to New York and saw them all at Irving Plaza.
Yeah, I saw all three in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, it was weird because when they announced them, they first did it in Chicago, and then they scheduled them in New York, and it seemed like they might not do anymore. So we got tickets. I went with two of my friends. We drove from Wisconsin to New York to go to those three.
Uh-huh.
And then like after a few weeks after we had tickets in New York, they started doing more around the country. I ended up seeing them do. I drove to Detroit to see them do the first album again, and I saw them do In Color in Milwaukee. So, I didn't see the Heaven Tonight one twice, but I saw the first two twice. But yeah,
that was one of the three of the best days of my life. It was so much fun.
And I was at the Silver concert in Rockford. You know, the 25th anniversary.
Yeah,
I was at that, and I the year before that at the same thing, the summer festival they have in Rockford. They did the complete Budokan concert. I saw that too.
Huh.
So
when I was playing in Exodus, after one of our shows, we went to a bar and Cheap Trick was playing. I forget what was that? That would be 92. What was happening in 92 with Cheap Trick at that time?
That would have been like between Busted and Woke Up With a Monster.
Okay, yeah.
So
it was like a club that held maybe 400 people.
Yeah. I've seen Cheap Trick like over 30 times. I don't know.
Me too. I've seen him probably more than that.
Yeah.
I can't even count how many times I've seen him. I've seen him so many times.
Yeah, I mean, I have a bunch of ticket stubs, but then I've seen him a bunch of times where there wasn't even a ticket stub, like at festivals and
anything.
All that kind of stuff.
I have no souvenirs from any shows.
No.
Do you have those Red Ant demos?
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured you would. You have all the Bunny's Basement bootlegs?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Why am I asking you?
Yeah. What are your favorite interviews that you've done for the Rock and Roll Geek Show?
I've interviewed a lot of people. When everybody asks me, I can't even remember who I've interviewed. My favorite was probably going and interviewing Ted Nugent on the most recent time I interviewed Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
That was like a dream come true because I when I was working at Mevio, I did a show called Hairbangers Ball, which was, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I went to see Ted Nugent at a horse track, horse races.
Yeah.
You pay $5 to get in the horse races. And I was looking in the paper when I was in Texas and I said, "Oh, look, horse races, $5 to get in and you get a free Ted Nugent concert." I said, "Ted Nugent's playing at the horse races for $5. I am there, man."
Yeah.
So it was so good. I've seen Ted Nugent a million times too.
Yeah.
Probably as many as Cheap Trick. I went on the show that I did at Mevio, and I started talking about it. And like a week later, I got an email from Ted Nugent's management saying Ted Nugent wants your address. He wants in your phone number. He wants to call you. And then next thing I know, Ted Nugent's coming to town, and they contacted me and said, "Hey, you want to interview Ted Nugent at the show?" And I said, "Oh yes, I do. Please." And he does one of those the VIP meet and greets,
mm-hmm.
you know, where people pay like, I don't know, however many dollars to see, to meet their hero.
Yeah.
So I got to interview him at the meet and greet. So one of the little bonuses was for these people who paid for the VIPs to watch him be interviewed. So I sat there and interviewed him, and then Derek St. Holmes walks by and they come in. It was so much fun. And then after the show, his manager came out and found me in the crowd and said, yeah, Ted Nugent wants to talk to you. And so I got to go backstage and talk to Ted for about 10 or 15 minutes. It was like really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
You had Tom Werman on, right?
I had Tom Werman on.
Did you have Jack Douglas?
No, but I had Bill Lacoin on.
Yeah, I was gonna. Yeah, I was gonna say Bill Lacoin. Yeah, and Bob Ezrin. Yeah,
those were good.
Yeah, and so how do you get those guys on your show?
I had this guy Shane, super producer Shane Chisholm,
and he's Australian, right?
Lined all these people up, and I think, I don't want to say this, but I think he might have died.
Really?
Because he disappeared off the face of the earth. I have not heard from him in almost 2 years.
Wow.
And we didn't have a falling out or anything.
Yeah.
And I looked on his Facebook page, and the last Facebook post was like 2012.
Yeah.
I've looked for him on LinkedIn. He's on LinkedIn, but I don't think he's posted anything on there forever. He hasn't returned my emails. So he did a lot of work for me and found me a lot of good guests.
And how? So, how would he do it?
I don't know. He would just say, hey, you want to interview blah, blah, blah? You want to interview Bill Lacoin? You want to interview Bob Ezrin? You want to interview Mike Chapman? Mike Chapman was one of my favorite interviews.
Yeah.
If your listeners don't know who Mike Chapman is, you should be ashamed of yourselves.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, my listeners don't send me emails, so I don't know who they are. But okay. If they're listening to my show, I would think they know who Mike Chapman
is. Your 600,000 listeners, you should be ashamed of yourselves if you don't know who Mike Chapman is. And I interviewed Susie Quattro.
Yeah, yeah.
And, a real good interview I did was with the guitar player for The Knack. We did a classic album.
That was great.
On The Knack.
Yeah, that was great. I remember that. Yeah,
It was right after
Doug Figer died, right?
Right after Doug Figer died. Yeah. I actually talked to Doug Figer because he was at that
Rock remember.
Fantasy Camp as well.
Yeah.
Super nice guy. And Elliot Easton was also there. They were best friends. So I talked to Elliot Easton. I interviewed him for a few minutes at the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. I assaulted him. Ambushed him.
Yeah.
Thank you. Stumbling over my words, but that was good too because that guy's one of my heroes, and so was Doug Figer. That Knack album.
Yeah.
So Mike Chapman produced the Knack album. So it all.
Well, all the Chin and Chapman stuff. I mean, the third episode of my podcast was about glam rock, and it's just ridiculous, all the songs they wrote.
When I interviewed Mike Chapman, the whole interview was on the suite, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
A little bit of the Knack. One Blondie question. He commented to my producer, Shane, that it was really refreshing to have an interview when no one asked any Blondie questions, so that was cool.
Well, you must like Blondie, though, right?
Yeah, I like Blondie, of course. I like Clem Burke was a fantastic drummer. I love Mike Chapman. If I could get anybody to produce a record of mine, it would be Mike Chapman. And we sent Mike Chapman that American Heartbreak disc, the one self-titled.
Yeah.
He didn't like it.
Yeah, I mean,
he didn't like it, but he didn't, you know.
Yeah, when I think of Mike Chapman, obviously the first thing that comes to mind is Sweet. But do you know some of those other bands like Hello and the Arrows and the other bands they did songs with?
Yeah,
really
the Arrows.
Great stuff.
Well, I Love Rock and Roll was an Arrows song, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they wrote that one. But they did a couple of Chin and Chapman songs, Touch Too Much, and then Hello.
Touch Too Much, that's not the same as AC/DC.
And then Hello are the band that originally did New York Groove, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But they have
that original version. Though.
Yeah, they have some amazing.
I didn't know he produced that.
I don't know if he produced that, but Hello recorded some Chin and Chapman songs. I mean, I don't know how those guys pumped out so many great songs.
And what's his name? Nick Gilder.
Yeah, I love Nick Gilder.
Please, man. Yeah.
Do you have his very first album? No, You Know Who You Are is the first Nick Gilder album?
I only have Runaways in the Night from that album.
Yeah, great song.
Yeah, yeah.
That whole album is amazing.
Yeah, it's and really Pat great. Benatar did that song Rated X or X-Rated on X.
Yeah, Rated X.
And Mike Chapman produced that album too. I think I talked to him about that first Pat Benatar album.
You know what? I always thought a great fit would have been you producing Cheap Trick.
Well, you know, yes, that would have been great. It would have been perfect. I actually worked with Rick Nielsen on a record I did with a wonderful band in Chicago back in the early 90s, Material Issue.
Uh-huh, right.
And I made what I thought was a terrific record with these kids. You know, it's like a punk Green Day kind of band.
Right.
Rick came in and played guitar on a couple of tracks, and we talked about the fact that we'd never worked together. We were sort of laughing about it, like, hey, that should have happened, you know? So, yeah, that would have been a good mix.
Yeah, and I asked, when I had Bill O'Coin on the show, somebody sent me, you know, said, you got to ask him about the gay. You got to ask if he's gay. You got to ask if he's gay. You got to ask if he's gay.
If Bill O'Coin's gay?
Yeah.
Didn't everyone already know that?
Yeah, I know. I was a fucking idiot for
bringing
it
up. And Sean Delaney,
I was an idiot for bringing it up. I brought Paul Stanley and Billy Squire into the question.
Right.
And that was, needless to say, the last question I asked before he had to go.
Yeah.
I kicked myself. It was a good interview up until then.
Yeah, it was great, yeah.
Now, that leads me to something that kind of ties in with Paul Stanley. There were always rumors about Billy Squire and as well as Paul Stanley about their sexuality.
Yeah.
Do you think, I don't know if they were gay or not, and I don't care, really, but do you think that if they were and if they came out of the closet when they were on top, do you think it would have affected their success?
Well, I mean, that's something you kind of have to ask them. I don't know. You know,
as a manager,
it really depends on the time. You know, it's like everything else; it's all timing. And sometimes things affect other people, and sometimes they don't. You know, a rock and roll fan might not have, or it might just confuse them, or whatever. And you know, but in any case, one way or another, there was never any indication that they were. I mean, I think that because they, in some cases, people just thought that they were, but there was never any indication they were.
Well, when I was a kid, I just assumed, it was always just like everybody, it was like assumed knowledge. Oh, Paul Stanley, he's bisexual. It was just like assumed that he was. Assume that he was, just for the sake of it. If he came to you and said, Bill, I'm thinking of coming out of the closet, would you have advised him against it or said, do what you want to do?
Probably at that time, yeah. If that had happened, I would have said, I don't think the label or anyone else is going to get behind it. I think it's going to be afraid of it. And if that was the case, I would have said that because, the time and place, things have changed over and over again since then. And it's a I just think it would have been the wrong time, especially in the middle of putting out a new album or doing something. You can only handle so many challenges at once, and you shouldn't put yourself under so much pressure. I mean, if you really want to do it, that's something else. If it's something that is close to your heart and no matter what it is and you have to do it, okay. Then what you do is you sit down with everyone and say, hey, how are we going to do this? How's the best way to do it? But I think if you don't have to do it or if it's not so close to your gut, then I think you got to be very realistic, and I would have advised them certainly not to do it if that had been the case.
What about in the year 2007? Would you still advise the same?
Well, I think they could certainly do it now, and I think that the no matter what the right-wing movement is in this country, the next generation doesn't have that feeling, and I think that anyone could easily do that today, I think, and as long as they were strong within themselves. I mean, they can't be weak because there's going to be controversy and there's going to be a battle over it no matter what, whether it's big or small. But, you know, I think today it could easily, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
For any artist.
Had no effect on Rob Halford, I don't think.
No, and I took Rob on quite a few tours with Kiss, you know, opening up for Kiss.
Oh, really?
So.
Oh, yeah,
no,
yes,
yeah.
Okay. Another good interview that I did was Jim Vallance, songwriter.
Yeah, that was great.
Chrissy Amphlett was probably one of my favorites because I was in love with that woman. She was one of my all-time favorite people in the world.
what's his name? Angry Anderson, great one. Pete Way.
I really enjoyed the one you did with the New York Loose, Bridget West.
Bridget West, yeah.
That was really good. Yeah. I love hearing those stories, just the whole story of...
Yeah, the first interview was good because she talked about getting screwed over by the record label.
Yeah, all those stories of how bands get signed and then what happened afterwards. Yeah, I'm always interested in that.
Another interview that was took that turn as well was the guy from the Rock City Angels who just died recently.
Yeah, Bobby Durango.
Yeah, I cannot get enough of hearing stories about when people are just getting courted by the labels and how they fucked up.
Yeah.
How they think they're going to be huge and then it doesn't turn out that way. I don't know why I'm fascinated by that, but I am. I think everybody else probably is too.
Yeah. Well, and Rock City Angels had the whole thing where Johnny Depp was in the band and all that kind of stuff.
I have that album. It's a good album, actually.
Yeah.
He's not on it.
No,
from
Miami. Yeah, they were from Florida, and they actually had that first album that they recorded that didn't come out until like in 2000 or something.
Yeah.
But it's a lot kind of glammier. What's it called? Teenage Lipstick Boys.
Oh, right. That's right. I think I have that on.
It's way different than Young Man's Blues, but
yeah, I like Young Man's Blues.
Yeah.
That guy was a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Bobby Durango. So I thought he was. I thought he had his act cleaned up and everything, but I guess he didn't.
Yeah. I know one of the funnest periods to listen to the Rock and Roll Geek Show was the whole Jet Boy drama.
that was actually down. a good the episode of Good Clean Fun where I got thrown out of the game. That's classic radio right there, man. That was like the height of uncomfortableness. But that, if I was a listener of a radio show or a podcast, if I tuned into that, I think that's good radio.
Oh, it was great.
And all this going on after we had probably the best gig we've ever had in our lives.
Well, we did, but you could still, okay, let's address that. So we did have what in our opinion was a really, really, really good gig. But let's be real. Let's look at the wider picture. Is that all it was? Or did Richard ask us individually, look, guys, I need you guys to be on your best behavior. So, yes, the gig was great. But there were some things that were not great, such as how Mickey responded and took – it was more important for him to – he put a lot of energy with his girlfriend being there.
To try to get an autograph from Alice Cooper.
And
is that such a bad thing
what?
To try to get Alice's autograph?
No, you're missing the point. Of course not. But when it means – when that's more important, then I think Richard and what we were trying to convey here, and Richard's trying to convey, look, this is a business. We need to set up and make the best example so Alice's people will look at us and go, what a great band. These guys are pro. Let's take them with us. So if Mickey had to sacrifice this one show to go, you know what, I'm going to play my role, do what Richard as the manager suggests we do, and do it. There's nothing wrong with wanting to get autographs, but if it's going to risk and put the band at jeopardy, then it is. If it would have been me, I would have been chastised. If I would have done that, I would have gotten in trouble. Not
I think we all got chastised after that gig.
Well,
we got a
Richard,
suit. We got like a 3,000 word essay on how each of us fucked up at the gig. That's a real morale builder.
Well, I'm not going to be offended by that because here's the deal. We have to look at a situation and go, is it true? We have to ask ourselves deep down and go, is what's being said here really true? If something is said about me and I really search myself and go, you know what? That is true.
Well, the email that what was said about me was not true.
About what?
That I demanded $200 a day on the road, which is totally not true.
Well, okay.
Right, I want to see the email that says that because I never discuss money with Richard.
Well, I think he is probably searching for that now because I don't.
I wish he would find it and send it to me, and I'll admit I'm wrong if he can find the email that I sent because
okay,
I didn't.
Okay. So, but Richard's track record with us, as you know, and we all of us, he's pretty straightforward and up guy. I can't say
you should be reading the chat, Fernie. It's pretty funny.
What's that?
You should be reading the chat that's going on right now.
No, let's no,
go ahead.
Focus.
Go ahead, Fern.
No, I think it's good. Let's focus on what's happened. Let's go back to the email where that last one where I said let's put it on banned business on hold. Now, that's cryptic.
That's not let's put banned business on hold. It's quote. Yeah. There are no rehearsals in band business for the time being. What am I supposed to think? While we look for a new bass player and drummer? While we look for a new drummer? While we look for a new... Who knows?
Yeah, but wait a minute. You know that there would have been a communication.
And this was all after an email that you and... an email exchange that you and Doug had when it ended in, fuck you, motherfucker, because you chastised Doug and told Doug he had to earn the right to have... had to earn the right to have a say in the band. You have to earn the right. Boy, that makes it a lot of fun to play in a band where you got to earn a right.
You do. Well, I think it is because, you see, Doug is an example of somebody. If you read his communications over the course of the last 4 or 5 months, he had all of these. See, Doug was an individual who, in person, he knew how to play his role. He was a very quiet, demure, unassuming, didn't say anything never said anything in person. He had many opportunities to say, hey, guys, you know, for example, how many times at band practices have we had where you or Doug could have said, hey, guys, before we start, I want to get some things off my chest. How about if we don't practice tonight? Something is really bothering Mickey and Billy. You guys have been at the rehearsals. We've never stopped you. We could have had meetings.
I don't have anything on my chest. I thought we had a great gig. I was enjoying the ride.
Really? So you had a great gig. So let me see. I had asked you guys, hey, guys, before we hit the stage, make sure you're plugged in, ready to go. Check your gear. Now, so it's a great gig. So let's see. If you're out in the audience and you're on stage, when Robert Bertolio goes, ladies and gentlemen, here's Jet Boy, and we go, kapow, were you on or were you off?
Okay. I was off.
Okay, so that right there, well, I don't know what that means, but I figured,
okay.
You know what?
At okay, M3,
now,
go ahead.
Okay, now number two. It was a great gig, but...
let's focus on
now,
the negatives of the gig.
Wait a minute. For months now, for the last few weeks before the Alice show, we knew that we had a big gig coming up. You knew that you know, without forcing you, that everybody from Richard, all of us down the line, knew that you had a wireless system that was unreliable, and essentially every single
show... You hear
show,
what I'm going through, Jasper? You hear what I do in this band?
Yeah,
but,
you listen.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that I figure everybody has a role to play. You are, as a good bass player, you would think you would want to have gear that was reliable. How many times did your bass go out in the biggest show we've ever done, that's supposedly the best gig ever? How many times did your bass rig
about three, and it was about for 1 second at a time.
And now you're going to tell
so
me
a total
that,
of about 3 seconds.
That, and to me, and if I'm not mistaken, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, come
3
on.
3 seconds out of the whole gig. 3 seconds.
Cooper,
3 seconds.
That's a big deal, man.
Did you notice that when Alice Cooper's guitar player busted his ass on stage? Did you see that part?
What do you mean? What does busted his ass mean?
He fell. He was running across the stage and he fell and he ate it face first. Did you see that part?
Well, now we're not.
No, you didn't
about
see
him.
It.
We're
that my point. My point is, no one noticed.
We noticed. Your
yeah, you guys noticed.
The manager of the band, we noticed. It's about us presenting. You're right. I don't care what they think.
This is all this happened
about.
Exactly the same after the M3. I get a call from you when I'm on vacation after M3 when we've kicked ass. We were probably the second most well-received band on that entire festival, and I get a call from you saying that you and Billy have decided that there will be no drinking in any band business. After we just had a great gig, you start laying down the law, which is the exact same thing that fucking happened after the Alice Cooper gig, and it's fucking bullshit power trip. We should be enjoying ourselves and having a fucking good time playing rock and roll.
Wow. Well, yeah, I think if you're in a cover band and you guys and you get together with your buddies like the Butlers, where it's like,
go ahead,
you know what?
Go ahead.
Wait a minute. So you have a
here's,
show.
Here's
like
Fern.
Butlers.
Here's condescending Fern. Go ahead, condescending
no,
Fern.
I'm agreeing with you. I think if
my little cover band. Go ahead.
What's cover band? You guys are doing covers.
Well, I'll buy this. This professional band just lost its drummer due to you guys' laying down the law and all the rules.
Well,
and you're getting ready to lose a bass player.
Well, unfortunately, see, Doug has, there's two sides to
Did
Doug.
You hear what I said? Are you glad Doug quit?
Am I glad that Doug
Yeah,
quit?
Are you glad Doug's out of the band?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not.
I'm sorry that you feel that way. I'm very happy because he was a time bomb. Unfortunately.
And I'm a time bomb too, Fern, aren't I?
You're different. You have
Maybe you'll be glad when I'm out of the band too.
You're different. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, to start, you know, to continue forward, I mean, I think it's pretty much, yeah. I mean, actually, you're not in Jet Boy.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're out.
There you
Absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
I'm out of the band, so I'm kicked out of the band.
Well, you're being let go. It's
okay. I will be there Thursday to get my gear. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's probably it's for the best.
Yeah, it probably is.
So, unfortunately, yeah, you're not in the band anymore.
Well, it was, I mean, I thought it was funny all along because I just knew, your taste and I knew you didn't like the Jet Boys music. It just wasn't your thing. But you were just kind of, you know, doing the band because American Heartbreak was broken up, right? And so,
and
you
Billy
got to play Rocklahoma. And yeah.
Yeah, I got to play good gigs. I liked the guys in the band.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, it was fun rocking out on stage. I just thought the music was cheesy, that's all.
Yeah. Well, they.
But
I enjoyed
jumping around and acting like an idiot. And it was fun to play, but I just didn't think it was that great to listen to, that's all.
They were one of, like, those like late 80s, what people call hair metal bands or whatever. Yeah. They were one of, like, the more bluesier bands, which that was the kind of hair metal that I never really got into, was if it was bluesy, you know. Yeah,
well, Billy Rowe is a worshiper of Malcolm Young.
Right.
And Billy Rowe is one of the best rhythm guitar players that I know now. He's really, really good on rhythm guitar. And I love Billy Rowe.
Yeah.
But you know, I just didn't love Jet Boy's music. But I enjoyed the guy. I mean, I like Mickey Finn. Mickey Finn's a... They're all great guys. I just thought the music was a little bit silly. And I was... And what was happening is I stood up for my drummer. You know, the drummer who quit, I stood up for him as the reason I got kicked out of the band.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It was good listening. That was reality radio at its purest right there.
But you guys played Rocklahoma, right?
Yeah, we played Rocklahoma. We played M3 Fest. We played a lot of stuff. We opened up for Alice Cooper, supported Alice Cooper, and we were on. When I was in the bit, before I got kicked out, we were on the rise. You know, we were on an upward projectile or trajectory or however you say it. But I liked playing in Jet Boy. It was just, you know, I didn't like it getting kicked out of the band on my own podcast. But you know, what are you going to do you're going to get kicked out of a band? The best way to be kicked out of a band is on the radio.
There were a couple episodes that had drama even before you got kicked out, weren't there?
I don't remember. Probably.
What's the guitar player's name, the other guitar player?
Fernie Rod.
Fernie, yeah.
Fernie's the one that I had on the show because he sent me an email and said, "You're an asshole." Because I tell you, that's right. I said something about it on my podcast, and he listened to it and was upset. And I said, "Well, come on the Good Clean Fun Show tonight. Talk about it." Little did I know he was going to come on there and kick me out. That kind of surprised me. But hey, it was good radio.
Did you have Mickey Finn on then after that?
Yeah, because talked about his other band.
Yeah, and that band he was in had a couple of guys from the Zeros. I remember.
Yeah, they still play all the time. I think they tour constantly.
They're kind of like rockabilly or something, right?
Yeah, psychobilly.
Psychobilly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Mickey Finn really likes. That's what's in his heart. So yeah. I commend him for that.
Sure. What do you know that band, The Zeros?
Mm-hmm.
They were awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think two of the guys from The Zeros are in that band with him.
Yeah. And that one guy in The Zeros is a huge Stars fanatic.
Yeah. Yeah, I love The Zeros.
Yeah, I don't know their music that well, but we played a couple of gigs with them when I was in American Heartbreak, I think.
They had an album in like 92 or something.
Mm-hmm.
4-3-2-1.
They had all purple hair.
Yeah.
And I think they did a Howard Stern theme song too.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, but that album is really great. It's almost closer to like pop punk than, uh-huh, you know, it doesn't sound like hair metal. It's more like pop punk. It's great.
Beatles.
And you had a war with the Classic Metal Show guys?
Oh, yeah.
Or,
oh, you didn't hear that?
No, I have. No. Was
Yeah, they goofed on me.
What episode was that on? I gotta hear that.
One of their listeners calls in, used to call into my show all the time. This guy, Tim James from Australia.
Uh-huh.
And they did a whole bit. They played me talking to my voicemail. You know how people will call in my voicemail, and I'll carry on a conversation with a voicemail.
Yeah.
They did a whole 35, 40 minutes goofing on me, carrying on conversations with my voicemail. And so then I thought it would be funny to talk about it on Good Clean Fun.
Okay.
And that started the war.
So I thought we would bring Michael Butler's show, which I guess from what I understand now after listening to this.
Yeah.
He's got two shows.
Yes.
He's got the Rock and Roll Geek Show.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got a show called Good Clean Fun, which he co-hosts with a guy by the name of Jasper.
Yeah.
Okay. So I distinguish that they got two different things going on there.
Right. So he's not gonna let us be on the Rock and Roll Geek Show.
Right. So he and his co-host Jasper decide to discuss what we discussed about the Rock and Roll Geek Show on our show.
Sure.
So let's check this out.
All right.
Speaking of morning radio, I know some people probably subscribe to that Classic Metal Show. Those motherfuckers spent 45 minutes goofing on the Rock and Roll Geek Show. So if anybody subscribes to that show, why? It is the worst morning zoo fucking crap. It's these two fat douchebags, fucking idiots, laughing at themselves, man. Oh, I'm going to get me slowly. I turn.
Is that what we're laughing about? We're laughing at ourselves?
That's what I think.
He just pulls up a clip where we're just kind of laughing about something, but we're laughing at ourselves.
Yeah, because that's what we do. Just sit here and laugh and laugh.
Right.
No, wait. Set up this thing that you're listening to of yourself. What is
okay.
this?
Okay. Well, first of all, you're going to hear repeating. Sorry about that, Jasper. But, so what's our friend, the guy who used to piss you off all the time. What's his name? Fuck. Why can't I remember? He's a friend of I like the guy. What? He called it hate comments. Oh.
I like the guy, but I can't remember who he is.
Big fan.
Yeah, because I really like him. He's a fan of the show. Couldn't tell you who he is.
Yeah, you know that guy.
Yeah.
John, I'm sorry, I don't remember. It'll come to me. Anyway, he said, hey, there's this show, Classic Metal Show, is bad-mouthing your show, and here's the link, and it's about 15 minutes in. He first said Tim James is cheating on you. He called in and said that this was the best show out there. And then he called. Then he sent me an email and said they're bad-mouthing you. All right.
Now, again, that's a lie. We didn't bad-mouth Michael Butler.
No.
Or the Rock and Roll Geek Show. We didn't say, man, this is a horrible show. Why is he even bothering?
We thought that the interviewing a voicemail was stupid.
Yeah, we just thought it was kind of different or silly, but we didn't even say it was stupid or quote unquote retarded.
Well, I'll say it now. It is stupid and it is retarded to fucking interview a fucking piece of digital audio.
Okay.
It's dumb as a fucking rock. It's fucking dumb. Mix
so
in a
this
fucking
is them talking.
Right? Mix in a fucking phone number, you fucking phony piece of shit.
But he's not live, though.
Yeah, well, pick a time if you're going to take phone calls, and I know he's going to get to it later, but he's going to say, well, they don't get my stream of consciousness. Yes, because your stream of consciousness is dumb as fuck, you stupid fuck. Get a goddamn Google Voice number and take calls, you dickhead. It's free. That seems to be in your wheelhouse, you stupid fuck.
Talking to Tim James. Tim James called in, and he's calling in from the McDonald's bathroom or something. Okay. All right, here you go.
Well, apparently.
Don't make fun of Tim James, man. We like him.
I like Tim. And they're making fun of me because I'm not making fun of Tim James. What they really make fun of me is I have a conversation with a voicemail.
Okay, so he gets that.
Yeah, because it's dumb.
Because we thought it was kind of like, are you really talking to a voicemail?
This is like him talking to his answering machine, you stupid motherfucker. Yes, we're going to make fun of it.
Yeah, because
it's like talking to your television.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre.
It's something that won't answer back. It's not a conversation which you're trying to pretend you're having, dumb shit. That's why we're fucking attacking it as stupid, you fuck.
I guess they think that's lame.
Yeah,
here
we
they
do.
Are. They're called Classic Metal Show. It should be called the Fat Dude Show. Whatever. Okay. Here
good. So there we go. It's the Fat Dude Show.
Yeah. Then the war started, and then they registered rockandrollgeekshow.com or something like that, or the rockandrollgeekshow.com, and thought it was real funny. Then the guy asked me if I wanted to be part of their network. And I said, well, it sounds interesting. How many listeners do you have on your network? And that's when it really pissed him off. So, yeah. And then I stopped. They continued to goof on me for a while, but I stopped acknowledging them. But yeah. Chris Cizniak tried to keep it going.
I heard them when they were making fun of Talking Metal. So I guess that's their thing, is to make fun of other.
Yeah, they want to be shock jocks.
Is that so? That episode of Good Clean Fun's probably still on iTunes, huh? Where you bashed the classic metal show?
I don't know. Probably.
Was it a long time ago?
I didn't bash them. Okay. I was playing clips of them bashing me.
Oh, okay. All right.
And they were playing clips of me talking to their voicemail. So I was like so meta, unbelievable. So I was playing clips of them playing clips of me playing clips of whatever. You know, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was kind of funny, but it was ridiculous, man. And then I called the guy a fat fuck because they registered their name. I said, "You fat fuck, you got some nerve, register." And then he called me out. The guy who I don't know what his name, Chris Dash or whatever his name is.
I don't know.
And as soon as he came back with a retort, he blocked me on Facebook. This was all like a Facebook private message. And as soon as he defended himself, he blocked me.
Yeah.
He wouldn't even. So
he got the last word. Yeah.
Yeah. Puss move.
Yeah.
His wife left him too, by the way. You can imagine why. I tried to get Jasper to agree to having his wife on the show. But then it would have just devolved into more podcast wars, which is stupid. So I just decided to take the high road and not say anything.
Yeah, podcast wars. That's an interesting phenomenon.
I mean, that's a new low in society when you got podcast wars, man.
Yeah.
that's like Little League wars or something, you know, T-ball wars. Parents of T-ball teams going to war with each other.
Yeah, right.
It was good times. All right. Anything else, BJ?
No, I'm good.
You're still recording this, aren't you?
Yeah, but I'll be editing the shit out of it. Well,
one thing you can say about the Rock and Roll Geek Show, at least I'm honest, man.
Yeah.
It might be unprofessional, and it might be crappy, whatever, but at least I'm honest. Not trying to be a jokester or a shock jock.
Okay.
All right.
All right, now we're really going to hang up, so...
All right, BJ. So, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. Good.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Talk to you again.
So there you have it. That's the interview, if you can call it that, with Michael Butler. Now, in 2009, Ginger from the Wild Hearts played a couple of shows in Los Angeles in July and again in August, and he put together a band in the U.S. just specifically for those two shows. And the guitar player was Billy Morrison, who had been in the Cult, and he was a part of Camp Freddy with Matt Sorum and Dave Navarro. They were a supergroup cover band. And Scott Lipps on drums, and then Michael Butler was the bass player. And Michael and Ginger also wrote and recorded one song together, and they called themselves the Sonic Graffiti. And Michael was kind enough to send me that song over to play at the end of the show. So now, to play us out...
What does that mean, to play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
This is Mystery Number by the Sonic Graffiti, featuring Ginger and Michael Butler. Till next time.
Could have been a
be back.
Hey, can you pause this for a second? I have to piss really, really bad. Give me like 30 seconds.
Okay, no problem.